I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthar, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that hums with delight every time we stumble upon a movie that we like. That happened more than once over the past few weeks, a fact that we'll explain by discussing three movies that feature music at their very centers. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, for example, is an adaptation of August Wilson's play that features Viola Davis as the blues legend of the film's title. Sound of Metal has Riz Ahmed starring as the struggling drummer of a heavy metal duo. And Soul, the latest Pixar animated creation, follows the story of a jazz pianist who will do anything, including trying to cheat death, to achieve his life's dream. Let's begin by turning our Wayback Machine to 1920s Chicago. That is the setting for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, adapted from August Wilson's 1982 play, which is part of Wilson's 10-play Pittsburgh cycle, which includes the Pulitzer Prize winners Fences and The Piano Lesson. The movie was adapted by George C. Wolfe. And while Wolfe makes attempts to transform what clearly is a work designed for the stage into a movie, his adaptation can't escape the dialogue-heavy feel of Wilson's original work. That isn't bad, though, not when Wolfe has actors such as Viola Davis, Chadwick Boseman, and Glenn Turman to rely on. Set in real time during a contentious recording session of the real-life blues singer Ma Rainey, played by Davis, the movie tackles a variety of topics, from the exploitation of musicians by record producers to the changing nature of musical styles, all overshadowed by the pernicious nature of racism. And while the acting of veterans such as Davis and Turman is indeed notable, it's Boseman, in one of his last performances before dying last August, who stands out the most, portraying his character of Levy with a powerful blend of arrogance and desperation.
I think that we could begin talking about Ma Rainey's Black Bottom from several perspectives. And you introduced a number of themes, Dan, up front, and most notably talking about how plays translate into film, issues involving the racial migration from the South to the North, the generational split, and so forth. But I think the best place to begin really is with the two lead performances, because I think that they are going to become iconic, not only because they were extremely well done, but because of Chadwick Boseman's passing, it just seems as though, you know, this is, as you said, the last hurrah for him. And if you compare what he's done in some of his other films, especially if we look obviously at Black Panther, but even like his portrayal of Jackie Robinson, he has, you know, done these other sort of biopic types of things. So we can talk about that a little bit more. But here, unbeknownst to us, when this was being filmed, you know, he did have terminal cancer, and he's so tightly wound and so such a contrast to his persona in Black Panther here that it's almost startling in some ways. And so it's hard to sort of view what he's doing here outside the sort of notion of what we learn later about his health situation. But I thought he captured perfectly the notion of the young person who's coming on the scene and is really sort of cocky and self-assured and is convinced that Ma Rainey and the other members of the band are living in the past, and he's going to school them about what is the right way to proceed. And then when Viola Davis comes on the screen, you're like, I think you've met your match. I don't think this is going to be happening for you, Lovey. So just better take a step back. And she just, in many of her performances, she just commands the screen. But that is certainly true here, because she is larger than life in every way. And she is, used to being the diva. She's used to being the queen, and she plays that particular role to the hilt. And then if you add in the band members, we have the issue of, you know, their struggles as independent musicians or as studio musicians or really wanting to play live music in their own style, but they're beholden to these white managers and handlers and so forth. So I know, Dan, you put this on your top 10 list. It was not on mine, but there's so much to like about this. I think that they are trying to preserve all of August Wilson's plays in some sort of format. Certainly film has the most long-lasting ability to do that.
Right, and Fences was put out, what, a year ago with Denzel Washington. Right.
So I think we may see more of these roll out. And based on what we've seen so far, I say great idea. You just have to sort of resign yourself to the fact that, yeah, this is a play that is now on screen and it does have that feel in different parts.
Well, yeah, and obviously, you know, you kind of approached Ma Rainey's Black Bottom as a showcase for the performances. And I mean, that's basically what it is, in much the same way that Fences was. I mean, Viola Davis won her Oscar for that movie, and not wrongly so. But I kind of want to talk about this movie as a film about music, because there's this really terrific montage early on in the film where Ma Rainey finally gets to the recording studio and they're going into this song and they're recording on these wax cylinders and, you know, they're recording it all live at once in the studio. And so if you make a single mistake, the entire recording is useless. And so there's just this bit where we see all of these, you know, this one useless record after another being thrown into a bin and they shatter. And you just get the sense that the immediacy that you feel from this music, not just from Ma Rainey, but from her contemporaries, is a legitimate thing. You know, they really were capturing these moments as they happen. And I think that the movie doesn't really get into Ma Rainey's artistry that much. But I mean, I think you can go back and listen to those original recordings and get a sense of that. But what it does do is it explores each of, and you touched on this a bit, Mary Pat, it does touch on the kind of the generational divide that exists within this group, but also just their individual struggles as Black people in America. And we hear that in the music. We hear that tension, and we hear that that frustration in the music, even though the music is almost this cathartic release from all of that. And there's a really telling moment in this film, and I don't want to give it too much away, but it happens at the very end, where we see an all-white ensemble playing the same music. And it's arguably, you know, just as competent on a musical front. And yet the band is just going through the motion. There's no passion in this music that they're playing. And it's this obvious juxtaposition that that George Wolfe is giving us here. And I don't think that the movie is arguing, or August Wilson's original material is arguing, that in order to make great art, an artist has to suffer. But it is kind of giving us an appreciation for how difficult this music was to make on a number of different levels, not just on a technical level, but just in the sense, as you said, that, you know, this is an all Black band, and just to find a space where they can perform together, where they can practice together, was a challenge. And so I think all of that is captured really well in this. And as you said, I mean, the two central performances, the Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman performances, are terrific. And I've been saying it for a while now that I think Chadwick Boseman will probably win a posthumous Oscar for this. I mean, it's one of those performances that you really can't take your eyes off him. And I mean, you know, there is a sense of loss there, obviously, that is imbued within the performance. But I think even if he were still with us, I think it would still be a remarkable achievement in screen acting.
Yeah, this might be also one of those years. I remember the year that Al Pacino was nominated both for Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor. That might happen with Chadwick Boseman, because he was really good in Da Five Bloods, Spike Lee's movie. And let's face it, the fact that it's kind of the Peter Finch, Heath Ledger syndrome, that not that he doesn't deserve it, but the death of any celebrity kind of makes their star glow a little brighter, at least for the moment. One of the things that I wanted to talk about before we have to take a break is this whole notion of white musicians co-opting Black music. And, you know, let's face it, this movie, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, though it's set in the 1920s, that was a staple of the 1950s. I mean, Pat Boone owes his entire career to taking the music of Fats Domino, for example.
Not to mention most of the rock and roll of the 1960s. I mean, Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, even the Beatles, you know, all of their influences, particularly the Stones and particularly Zeppelin. I mean, their primary influences were the black blues musicians of this particular era, not just Ma Rainey, but people like Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Leadbelly and Howlin' Wolf. And yet they were the ones that got the $1 million record contracts.
Well, and at one point, Ma Rainey says in this particular film, white folks don't understand the blues. They hear it come out, but they don't know how it got there. They don't understand that it's life's way of talking. And I think that, as you said, you can play the blues, but some people are channeling and feeling the blues. And I think that we get a good sense of that in this particular film.
That's right.
Yeah, that's basically what the movie is about, I think.
That's right. And we were talking about Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Sound of Metal and Soul. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SPR, Fund for the Future, Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, your attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation, formerly known as Inland Northwest Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Let's now move to Sound of Metal and Soul. And let's begin with a movie that is less about music than it is about the nature of sound itself. On the face of it, Sound of Metal, which was directed by first-time feature filmmaker Darius Marder, would seem to be a film designed to appeal most to fans of bands such as Metallica or Megadeth. But instead of a concert film, Marder gives us a movie about a guy, a drummer in a two-piece metal band named Ruben, played by Riz Ahmed, who is facing the supreme irony for a musician. He's losing his hearing. And so Marder shows us as Ruben struggles with the condition, desperate to hold on to some vestige of his career, if not his very life, making decisions that seem natural at the time, but probably won't be the best for him in the long term. And Ahmed, in particular, is superb as a guy who ultimately, and again ironically, discovers that the wonder of life may not come in the guise of music, but, as Paul Simon once sang, in the mystical sounds of silence.
Well, we don't talk too often on the show when we're reviewing a movie about the art of sound design. And maybe it's because we just don't know enough to be experts on it. And maybe it's because when sound design is really good, it seems sort of seamless and it immerses us in the movie. But here, the sound design in Sound of Metal, appropriately enough, is hugely important to the impact of the film and getting us into the headspace of this guy, Ruben, because the film is not only about what it actually sounds like to start losing your hearing, but what it would feel like. I mean, the disorientation of it, the frustration of it, the basic confusion and anger that you would have, especially when your livelihood revolves around you being able to hear things. And I think that what I love so much about this movie, because I do love it and I put it really high up on my top 10 list for 2020, is that a lot of movies about disabilities are pitiable or they're noble, and they usually concoct some kind of narrative about how, you know, losing one of your senses or faculties is like a learning experience or something like that. And although I'm sure that people do experience element of those things, what I really appreciate about Sound of Metal is that it treats Ruben's hearing loss as a fact. It doesn't feel like some kind of cheap narrative device. It doesn't feel like a hurdle that he has to clear, because by the end of the movie, he's still coming to grips with everything that comes with living as a deaf person. And I think that what the movie is about ultimately is that there can be, and you kind of mentioned this in your intro, Dan, that there's as much power in noise as there is in the absence of noise. And the ending of this movie touches on that in a really beautiful way. And maybe we can get into the performances, because Riz Ahmed obviously is fantastic in this, but I was expecting Sound of Metal to be sort of like a, you know, like a one man show, like a character piece. And it is that. But the ensemble of supporting characters that Darius Marder surrounds his protagonist with, it makes this movie so rich. And particularly, I liked Paul Rassi, or Rachi, I'm not totally sure how to pronounce his name, as the leader of this facility. And in real life, he is an ASL interpreter. He grew up with deaf parents, and he has this almost paternalistic role in this guy's life. And their relationship is as much the heart of this movie as his relationship with his girlfriend, played by Olivia Cooke, maybe even more so. So yeah, this is a movie that I can't wait to watch again. I just think that it's so full of life and energy, but also heart in a way that I didn't really anticipate at the beginning, when he's so angry and lashing out at everyone around him because of this. It's such a beautiful movie, and I really hope that people check it out. It's on Amazon Prime, which I don't think we've mentioned. So turn it up real loud and go along with it. I think you'll be really surprised by this.
I also like this a lot, in part for the performances, but also, as Nathan, as you're pointing out, for the way that it did handle the issue of a person who has a sudden onset of a condition, a disability that was unanticipated and affects something that was so central to the essence and the core of who he thought that he was.
Right.
And there are a few things that, maybe a few critiques that I could level at this film. I mean, I think there is at one point a little bit of a sudden transition between his ability to learn ASL and, you know, to sort of integrate himself into this community that he joins. Because the one thing that you haven't really focused on is the fact that he had a substance abuse problem and met his girlfriend, bandmate, and when they were both in recovery or beginning their recovery. And now that he's had to deal with this really unexpected situation, everyone is concerned that he's going to relapse because that's his, you know, go-to way of coping. But instead, he finds himself in this community that really focuses on the other things that he has to offer. I mean, he forms these relationships. The other thing that we should note is there are a lot of kids in this movie, because there's a school attached to the place where he's living. And there are wonderful performances by these kids at various points throughout the film. So it's heartwarming. I thought it was well done. As you point out, you know, the sound aspects of it are really one of the highlights. And so I would say, if you have access to a good sound system, it would be worthwhile to watch it when you can take advantage of that.
And that was Sound of Metal. Let's close with the Pixar film Soul. By now, we're all aware of what Pixar has accomplished. And film after film, from the Toy Story franchise to Finding Nemo, from Up to Inside Out, the company, under the Disney Studios banner, has delivered some of the most heartfelt animated movies ever made. And Soul is no different, concerned as it is with telling the story of Joe, a schoolteacher by day and hopeful jazz pianist by night. On the eve of his big break, Joe finds himself caught suddenly in another world between life and death, and his battle to avoid going to the great beyond ends up involving him with an unborn entity called 22. Their at first uneasy union ends up landing them both back on Earth, but in forms that are as unexpected as they are unfamiliar. Though you may not recognize them, Joe and 22's voices are voiced respectively and skillfully by Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey. Suffice it to say that in the end, lessons are learned, fates work out well, and all is fine in Pixar land.
I'll keep this brief because I don't know if Pixar necessarily needs any more publicity from us, but I liked this a lot. I even though I liked it a lot, I still think it's kind of like mid-tier Pixar, because top-tier Pixar is so good that we rarely see movies even from them that approach the heights of something like Up or Inside Out. And this, directed by Pete Docter, who did both of those earlier films, I mean, this does feel like a kind of a rerun of some of the stylistic devices of Inside Out, that they've taken this very complex kind of psychological idea and have kind of literalized it into this, you know, this world that both kids and adults can relate to. I don't think it's as effective as Inside Out is in that respect. And there, by the end, there's a lot of just kind of running around from one place or another, and I sort of lost interest. But the setup is fun. It kind of has a like a defending your life or a matter of life and death kind of vibe to it, if you want to see other movies for adults with similar themes. But yeah, the animation is great. The music is
great. The animation is great.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
underscore that.
That's why I put this film actually on my top 10 list, because typically I like to reach out to different genres anyway. But to me, I thought this was beautiful. And I liked the theme of, even though it didn't always work. And Nathan, I think you're right. I mean, this is probably not the best that Pixar has to offer on every level, but I thought the visuals were incredible. I mean, it has almost this Picasso-esque feel to it at a couple of points. I like the music. I like the soundtrack. And so I think it would be, you know, a fun thing for
family. It's a fun family feature. Let's face it. But what Pixar film isn't?
Do you really think that kids are going to relate to the themes of death and life and settling your dues on earth? I wonder if this is and about jazz. I do wonder if, I mean, maybe there are kids out there that have more sophisticated tastes than I did when I was 7 or 8. But I wonder about that.
Yeah, I don't know who the target audience is exactly either. I mean, I think that there are parts of this to which they could relate. I mean, his whole relationship with his mom, who's voiced by Felicia Rashad. You know, I think there are things that are relatable, but you're right. There's a level of sophistication or just interest that might not be that appealing to younger kids.
They'll like the kitty, the funny cat.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So did Mary Pat. Yes.
Yeah.
In any event, that was Soul, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in our show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and Sound of Metal. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when I'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the late great poet Langston Hughes. Life is for the living, death is for the dead. Let life be like music, and death a note unsaid. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.